You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Reporting is Eligible is proudly supported by Appleton Coffee Company, a small local roaster in Appleton, Wisconsin. They provide coffee around the world. The Packerland Breakfast Blend will be going on sale to be $12 a bag. While you're there, how about you pick up a Reporting is Eligible t-shirt or sweatshirt? And make sure you use RAE at checkout to save yourself some money. Again, that's RAE at checkout.
Hey everybody, welcome to Season 3, Episode 5 of Reporting is Eligible, or if you're listening to this on the Acme Packing Company podcast, maybe the first time you'll ever hear it. So, I want to start off, I'm Paul Noonan, right for Acme Packing Company and Shepherd Express, and really quick housekeeping announcement before we get started in earnest here. Acme Packing Company is expanding its podcast feed immensely. We've had one podcast forever. It's run by Zach Rapport. He does a great job. But podcast networks are more successful than individual podcasts, and you see things like Locked On dominating podcast rankings. And we decided we have enough people with Justice joining that we can actually put together a decent show every week with various people. And this will be showing up on the APC feed on Thursdays if you listen to this as you do now. I'm going to set it up. You don't have to change anything at all. You can still listen to the RAE feed. But if you subscribe to Acme Packing Company, this will be posting as part of that podcast network on Thursday as well on the APC feed if you subscribe to that. If you subscribe to that, you'll also get a bunch of other podcasts from Justice, from Zach, and from a slew of other people doing, you know, more newsy stuff in the morning and more things like we do in the afternoon. So do subscribe to that and check it out as well. And that's the end of housekeeping. So otherwise, nothing's changes, and you can be changing, and you can all be the same listeners you've always been. But back to business at hand. There's actually football this week for the first time in a long time. I'm not counting the Wisconsin game this weekend for obvious reasons. And there's just a home run by Avisail Garcia. Also, all off to good starts here. So the Packers are going to kick things off against the Saints this week in Jacksonville, Florida, because everywhere in the southern United States, well, actually most of the country is an ecological disaster right now, but Hurricane Ida has taken out New Orleans for the time being, and nobody else wanted to host this thing, apparently. So we're going to play in Florida in 90-degree weather, and that's that. So to help preview this and talk about the Packers and the Saints and everything else in urban Wauwatosa, we have...
Hey, it's J.R. Radcliffe, training sports reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And for those who are familiar with the bit that we kick off this show with, it's usually you and me talking. And yep. Then, you know, we bring him a tub a little bit later on. But on this episode, man, I thought, oh no, I've been cut out. It's just Paul now.
Sorry.
No. It's great. It's a lot of important information to absorb. And yes, this is a good time for Wisconsin sports as we're watching yet another what's going to be another Brewers victory.
Yeah.
But the Packers, man, the the weather forecast that you just mentioned is man, that is something, isn't it? The whole southern United States is just under siege pretty much with weather and whatnot. And now they're gonna, I mean, like you're gonna get there in 95-96 degree heat. It's gonna be a good time, and it's gonna be all Packers fans.
It is. It's like, gonna all. Yeah, absolutely true. I mean, it's not that there aren't Saints fans. It's just that they're all, you know, dealing with their homes and stuff right now.
Yeah.
So, and Packer fans retire down there. And so, yeah, it's going to be something. I did want to mention, it's stupid that Jacksonville has a team at all and that they have a professional football stadium. I am a defender. I think everybody should get to host the Super Bowl no matter where they are, even Green Bay. Even, you know, it should go through everywhere. Like, you know, baseball has it everywhere. And Jacksonville had the Super Bowl a while ago, and people made fun of it. And I do feel a little bad about that. But my viewpoint is egalitarian. Like, everybody should host the Super Bowl because everybody's got a team in the league. You shouldn't choose to go there voluntarily, though. And that's what really gets me about this. Because is Jacksonville, like, it's not one of those underrated, everybody complained about it for the Super Bowl. I feel like most cities that you don't think that much of, there's usually an undercurrent of, oh, this is actually secretly cool if you know where you're going. Like, I used to live in Detroit. There's cool places to go in Detroit. Like, but I've never heard anybody say that about Jacksonville. It seems like the seventh best city in Florida. Like, I don't get why this happened. I know Dallas couldn't do it because they have some concert not really in too close of proximity. JR, who's playing in Dallas? I forget their name.
Los Bookies are playing in Dallas.
Yeah, so couldn't do that. They could have played in Soldier. I mean, we own that place, but whatever. I did want to point out, Jacksonville is pretty big. It's the 13th biggest city in America, which is bigger than I thought it was. So I kind of get that, but it is going to be 86 there on Sunday, and in Green Bay, it's
86.
Not too.
That's
bad.
Not so bad. I thought Florida, it was going to be 90.
For Florida, that's okay. That's the forecast. In Green Bay, though, it's going to be 67, which is like perfect. So they're losing like a perfect day of football. It's unfortunate.
And I'm Matt, but you can call me Matub.
Yeah, nice work.
He forced his way in there this time.
He did. Well done.
So in the infamous rundown, Paul is actually already halfway through the first page. So I had to.
There are not that many words written about the city of Jacksonville. I did not know the passion level.
There's a whole ass paragraph.
And Matt,
there's a whole ass paragraph.
There's a big gap in the rundown that you because of a screenshot of Lil Jordan Humphrey's Raz. So just make sure you do get all the way to the bottom of it.
I do see that.
Okay.
So as always, I'm happy to call me Matub. Acme Packing Company Meme Smith and General Twitter Rabble Rouser. I haven't used that intro yet this season.
That's true. No. We're out of practice. We're getting better every week, though.
If you are,
it's regular season now, baby.
It is.
If you are listening for the first time because of the Acme Packing Company conglomerate, what's the word we're using now?
I don't know.
Network.
Let's go network.
Podcast network. Know that I came up through the ranks as an SB Nation commenter. I became part of the Acme Packing Company family because I wrote a fan post that characterized Aaron Charles Rogers as General Sherman on his way to burn Atlanta to the ground.
That's evergreen right now. I mean,
that's the only place where I think that description is endearing is when you're on a podcast in the same network. Like, yes, I'm one of you guys. Here are some of my greatest.
Hey, you know what? That article got 250,000 views in the first week.
That's incredible. Okay, well done.
Actually, incredible.
You win.
Yeah. So that's my claim to fame. I also make people mad on Twitter, and I used to post a lot of memes. I don't so much anymore.
Why not? What happened to your?
I became incredibly lazy.
Oh, well, you also had a second child, so I suppose that...
Yeah, that makes things
but
hard.
Also, my content kept getting stolen, and I didn't want to be one of those, like, watermark people.
Oh, yeah, fair enough. I hate
someone would take something that I put on Twitter and put it on Instagram and, like, get, you know, 30,000 likes or whatever, and I was just like, you know what? Screw this.
Not worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
So, steal this podcast, I dare you.
All right,
let's go back to bashing Jacksonville. That was a good time.
Yeah, it's a bad city. Nobody should go.
Now, this is, though, the stadium where they have like a swimming pool overlooking the field.
They have,
right? Like,
they have multiple swimming
pools. They do. Yes. Lots of swimming pools. I'm on board with that. Like, I'm pro swimming pool at sporting events. That's always a good idea.
I think if Trevor Lawrence doesn't fire up that fan base, I don't know what they're going to do. Like, at that point, if the number one overall pick, who's supposedly a generational talent, if he's not going to transform anything, I mean, they went to the AFC Championship game like what, 3 years ago? Like, they should have some built-in fans at this point, and it's just not happening for them.
They went to the AFC Championship with Blake Bortles as the quarterback.
Impressive. Yeah,
and Brad Nortman as their punter.
A Grossman-esque performance by the Jaguars that year.
I just looked this up. I live in I guess you could technically call it a suburb of Denver, even though it's its own large metro area. Jacksonville, with its major sports team, is only 1.5 times the size of my metro area.
Yep.
That so my metro right. area is just shy of a mil, and Jacksonville as of 2020 was 1.5.
Yep. I think their big problem is going to be not – I think Trevor Lawrence is good, and I think we'll be Peyton Manning-y enough to overcome a lot of Jacksonville problems, but – Urban, I think, is not going to work out as a professional coach. it seems weird there. They seem to be intent on running the ball a lot. You know, there's college football was for a long time very ahead of professional football in terms of strategic innovation, and a lot of it still is. But Urban's not one of those really progressive guys, and they're not going to do a whole bunch of pre-snap motion and play action and fun bootleggy stuff. They're going to be kind of old school, and that's not good for anybody, especially Trevor Lawrence. You could be in a better situation. Anyway, the Jaguars have nothing to do with this game at all. So
it's like they're not actually playing the Jaguars, we should point out, after all that. But one of the great stories of the last week is the CBS story. I think it emerged from CBS, revealing that behind the scenes, the Saints tried really hard to find a location that would not attract Packers fans. So they did research like how much money is it to get on a flight to get to Jacksonville, or how easy is it to get to Jacksonville? So that was part of the calculus, which is kind of hilarious. And, you know, it is unfortunate because, like you mentioned, the Saints fans have other things to worry about right now, and that's part of the problem. But, you know, like Packers fans are everywhere in Florida. I mean, they will overrun this stadium with Floridian Packers fans alone. It's not going to be about access. So that's, I do feel for that fan. I do feel for that team and that fan base to a small degree. They're going to lose this home game, probably others, or maybe not outright lose them to a team like, because there aren't many teams like the Packers when it comes to fan travel. But, you know, you're not going to, it's not going to feel like a home game for a while. And that's not their fault. And that's unfortunate.
Yep.
But the idea that they would, like you said, choose to go to Jacksonville is is highly suspect. I don't like, and you wrote this in the rundown, why the insistence on an NFL stadium seems unnecessary. Yeah. Like, college stadiums are very nice. Some of the more remodeled ones, there's lots of them in the South. They certainly seat as many, in most cases, more people than the NFL stadium. So I don't quite get it, but
I'm pretty sure they could find a high school stadium somewhere in Louisiana that's still standing that could house 100,000 people.
Absolutely.
Or in Texas. Easy peasy.
The word we kept getting was they need to be connected to the replay booth in New York. But that seems ridiculous because I'm talking to both of you on camera over the internet right now.
Yeah.
For, you know, basically no money. So it's not like this is
literally
also,
every work meeting is over the internet. Like, now,
this is life. This is also how the world works.
San Antonio has a pretty nice stadium, and they also have gigabit internet. Yeah. So
the whole thing was weird about needing an NFL stadium. It seems very stupid. They definitely should.
Did you guys know that the Saints displacement from Katrina has its own Wikipedia page?
No, but that's fine. It should. I'm sure it's quite the story.
It is. It's quite the story. Also, I completely forgot, and I think most people forgot, that there was talk of the owner using that as a way to move the team permanently.
Yep. I remember that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So hopefully
well, sort of happened. Why was Oklahoma City hosting a team in the first place again? What was going on there? Was that a full-fledged calculated thing in the NBA?
I think it was. Didn't they?
I thought that was a trial balloon.
It was a trial balloon. I forget the logistics of it though. And did the Sonics lease end or something? I totally forgot.
I don't remember. I was thinking there might be some natural disaster baked in there, but no, there's something. I mean, Seattle. So
And there's no kaiju in real life, so it's not that.
That would be awesome, though. Like, don't go to the West Coast. Yeah. Fires, earthquakes, kaiju. Anyway, the New Orleans Saints. They went to the Super Bowl not long after Katrina. Maybe this team will too, right? Jameis Winston turns out to be a superstar quarterback after all, you know?
I think, maybe. No. I think the best way to look at this Saints team is at looking in the mirror of what the Packers may be a year from now, because you're after your Hall of Fame quarterback is gone. It's the first year after that. The team kind of went all in on the salary cap with the expectation that it's either Breeze or bust, and then we rebuild. And so they hemorrhaged players, and I think you can expect the Packers to lose a lot of players next year. And it's kind of, you know, over in time. So it's over in time to rebuild, and they're just not going to be very good. Jameis is okay. You could do worse as a follow-up quarterback. The Packers might very well do worse as a follow-up quarterback. So, but Jameis is... we think he's worse than he is because one time he threw 30 interceptions in a season in modern football, which is incredible. I mean, that season should have its own DVD because that's really hard to do these days.
Are you saying that Jameis Winston's 30 interception season needs a 30 for 30?
It absolutely needs a 30 for 30. It's amazing it was allowed to happen. But he usually doesn't throw 30 interceptions. He usually throws like 12. And when he does, he's actually pretty good. He actually ranked around where Aaron Rodgers did in the late McCarthy era when they were kind of when Jameis was at his best and Rodgers was on the downswing there for a little bit. They were usually about equivalent in DVOA on a year-to-year basis. So.
Oh, you mean the I would rather have Andy Dalton year?
Yeah, exactly. That one. Thanks for that.
That was a good year.
Yeah. Good year. So Jameis is there, but that's, you know, that's not the problem with the Saints. It's not Drew Brees, but Drew Brees' shoulder was so shot at the end of last year. I think actually Jameis was probably better than he was by the time the season ended. So,
Paul, let's go over all the players that won't be there compared to who the Packers played against last year.
Sounds good. Let's do that because that's fun. So the Saints, like we mentioned, were in salary cap hell, and this is how you escape from it. So Drew Brees is gone. Emmanuel Sanders on last year's team, gone. Jared Cook, who is one of the best tight ends in the league in terms of receiving, he's gone. Michael Thomas, by the way, the Saints are a mess for other reasons. This is one of them. Michael Thomas waited, according to the Saints, too long in the offseason to have his ankle fixed and is now on the PUP list and will miss the first 6 weeks of the season. They're mad at him for doing that, and he's mad at them for making that information public and leaking it to everybody. So they're fighting with their best receiver, who may not be on the team much longer after this season is over, and it won't be there for the Packer game. Malcolm Brown, he's gone. Janoris Jenkins, who they got toasted a lot last year, but he's okay once in a while. He's gone. Trey Hendrickson, who had 13.5 sacks last year for the Saints, he is gone. Sheldon Rankins is a Bengal. And Alex Anzalone, it's probably not how you say that name, but gone as well. So, like, they just hemorrhaged people. They actually lost Quan Alexander for a little bit too, but they managed to get him back on a one-year deal. And that's a lot of talent to lose all in one offseason, especially when on offense, there's nobody behind Michael Thomas and Jared Cook to catch the ball other than Alvin Kamara, of course. Their starting receiving core is, I think, the worst in the league by a healthy margin. So it's not going to be a huge test for the Packers secondary this weekend, and it's going to be rough for Jameis to actually complete passes to anybody except Alvin Kamara. So that's fun.
Well, this is really good because the unofficial depth chart was released today, and Kevin King is CB2.
Yeah, he is, but I think we all kind of expected that. He'd been running CB2 all preseason. Eric Stokes hasn't done anything super good to show otherwise, and so the default wins, the two sweetest words in the English language. Default. That is a Simpsons joke. Sorry.
So Trey Hendrickson is the real loss there. Obviously, Michael Thomas is the real loss, but Trey Hendrickson's 26 years old.
Yep.
He came out of nowhere, not out of nowhere, but he emerged completely last year. Didn't get picked for the Pro Bowl, but could have been. I mean, not that it mattered. There was no real Pro Bowl. And he just signs a 4-year, $60 million deal with the Cincinnati Bengals, which doesn't like sound terribly cost prohibitive, but that's what happens when you're in salary cap hell. You end up losing out on these like rising stars. You could see that with the Packers too. Like if Rashawn Gary breaks through, like everyone hopes he is, they're not going to be able to keep him. You know, like there's a lot of guys who could take that next step and then you end up losing them. So that's an unfortunate peer into the crystal ball. I do think though that the Saints on defense, I mean, their offensive line actually has three studs on it, but
that's true.
Defense are still okay. You know, like you mentioned Quan Alexander, he's okay. You know, Marshawn Lattimore is still a shutdown type corner.
He is.
If he's right. Cameron Jordan is, you know, one of the best in the league at his position. DeMario Davis, middle linebacker, is exceptional.
Yep. Malcolm Jenkins is pretty good.
Malcolm Jenkins, I mean, veteran. He's an older guy, but still obviously, you know, he can get it done. So there's still a lot of talent there on defense. But I would also point out, if we're looking at that matchup from last year, 37-30 win, which was really kind of one of the better wins of the season for the Packers. They didn't have a lot of marquee wins just by the nature of the season. It's hard to get them, but that was probably one of their better ones. And remember, Devontae didn't play in that game. That was the first of his 3 days out. So Alan Lazard has a complete star turn. And you're thinking, well, you know, if you're looking back at highlights, like I was today, you're thinking, oh, well, Marshawn Lattimore shut down Devontae and Alan Lazard just, you know, was the number two guy. Well, he was the number one guy, and he had like six catches for 156 yards or something absurd.
Yep, he was great.
He would have had – was that his stumble game where like every pass he caught, he was stumbling while he caught it?
Yeah.
It was.
Yeah, there's another one where he would have had a touchdown, but he got like just destroyed in the end zone. It set up a – it was a pass interference penalty, set up a first and goal that they cashed in. So What a game for he was falling down, stumbling all over the place, catching a touchdown. Very well.
My favorite thing about Trey Hendrickson is he is a perfect example of Madden players know his name. Last year, in Madden Ultimate Team last year, known players get good players throughout the year. Like, as the year goes on, they get better and better players.
Uh-huh.
Trey Hendrickson had a 71 overall card at the beginning of the year, and then they just randomly gave him a 96 overall card at the end of the year. Nothing in between.
Okay.
Because it got to the leap forward.
It got to the end of the year, and EA went, oh, God, this guy was really good this year. We should do something about that.
Yep. The other thing about that game last year was the Kamara quake happened against the Packers year. And a lot of the guys who participated in the Kamara quake are still on the Packers. So, well, a little worried about that. It's not like the Saints have no path to victory here. Like, JR, you were right about their defense. They were the second best overall defense by DVOA last year. They were number one for a lot of the year. And they didn't lose. I read off they lost a ton of guys, but they're still like half loaded and will probably still have something like a top 10 defense. Also, Montrevious was there. And, oh, Zach Bond. Hey, look at that. Backup middle linebacker with Wisconsin. But,
oh, yeah. He'll see the field.
Yeah. But on offense, they are atrocious. Their starting wide receivers, depth chart wise, are Traquan Smith, who has one good fantasy game a year, so every fantasy player knows his name, and then like never catches another pass. Deontay Harris, who is a guy, and Marquez Callaway, who is also a guy. And Ty Montgomery is still, I think, fourth on the depth chart, which is not a good sign. And then they have a giant man named Lil Jordan Humphrey, who's 6'4", 225, who I want to see play just for that very reason. So I don't know anything about him other than his RAS is like... which I have in the rundown, so I should just go look at it. Just got to scroll down really far. 3.47, but the best part is his 40-yard dash was a 4.82 40-yard dash at his pro day. That is not good for a wide receiver. That's real bad. So one of the slowest guys on the field.
Always good when somebody's got the nickname Lil or Tiny or something.
Yep. And, no, that's his legal
it's
name.
His legal
no, I get it. Yeah. I get it. Yeah. I wonder if they like. I wonder if you know, mom and dad, given who they were, probably were like, "He's gonna be a big kid, but let's set him up for some irony down the line with Lil Jordan."
Yeah, did a nice job.
It sounds like Marquez Callaway is kind of emerged as the number one. That like Traquan Smith isn't even necessarily, but has been good enough. He's been hurt. Like he's coming off an Achilles injury and stuff. Yep. Oh my gosh, they're just gonna have to throw the ball to Kamara 50 times, right?
Like I think that's the plan.
He was top 20 last year in receptions in the NFL. So he's going to catch the ball a ton anyway.
Oh, by the way,
it's going to be Kamara.
They also cut Latavius Murray today. So like Kamara's veteran backup is no longer there, which was a big surprise. They asked him to take a pay cut. He said no, and yeah, they just axed him.
And he also had the best year of his career last year.
He did. So Alvin Kamara's backup right now is somebody named Tony Jones Jr. I do not know who that is. I had Latavius Murray stats, and now they're useless.
All right. Their offensive line, I mentioned them. Terron Armstead, Andres Pete on the left side, power side. A lot of Pro Bowls there. I think
they're
both
good.
Of them have been the last three. And Ryan Ramczyk, who's never been to a Pro Bowl, but does have an All-Pro, first-team All-Pro season under his belt. Of course, he's from the University of Wisconsin and just got paid in the offseason to be, I think, the highest-paid right tackle in the NFL, or at least among them. And he's sensational. So that's a guy that they should have drafted instead of Kevin King.
Yeah.
I will. That might be a lonely hill to die on, but that's the guy I really regret. T.J. Watt is going to be defensive player of the year someday. Is a perennial candidate. So like, I probably should regret that more. But I still feel like Ramchick. I mean, the Kevin King thing.
So bad. So bad.
So a little info on Tony Jones Jr.
Yes.
He has a career 13 rushing yards.
Okay.
He was an undrafted free agent.
Oh, Notre Dame. Okay. Uh-huh.
He ran a 4.68, and his three cone is 7.18.
Oh, that's not good.
So they're gonna pair their plus athlete receiving back with a not plus athlete pseudo power back.
Kind of a bowling ball size guy here.
He's about 5'11", 220.
Yeah, 220. Okay. That's Tony Jones.
He's a Brandon Spikes carrying the ball.
Good call. Yeah, they do. They do have a good line. And they, Jared's right. They did not lose much from last year off of the line, and they, I think, were number one in pass block win rate last year. Now, the Packers dominated both blocking statistics, but the Saints were right there with them on both counts, and also a good pass blocking team. So they have talent in the trenches, which actually does play to plays against a Packer weakness, because the Packers did not have a good pass rush last year. They had a huge regression to the mean season, where they lost from the Smith brothers about 71 hurries from 2019 to 2020. So if they can hold up and give Jameis time, maybe he can actually last long enough for all of those non-wide receivers to get themselves open. But there's not a lot there. The Packers should roll them like nothing.
Do you want to hear my defensive line hot take?
Yeah.
It will take until week 3 for Jack Heflin to supplant Dean Lowry.
Is that a hot take?
The fact that it'll take more than one week,
I guess. I'm on board with you on that. I think he's clearly better than Dean Lowry, and I think you might see the King and Lowry kind of step out at the same time. That's I think a changing of the guard will happen at some point there on both sides.
Guards play on offense, Paul.
Hilarious. Very funny.
Oh, come on.
The Packers also might not have that pass rush from those Smiths at all if half of them are gone. And it doesn't sound necessarily promising that Za'Darius Smith is going to be available. It sounds like it could be, but he's been held out for so long and is just now, as of early in the week, getting back toward like individual workouts. Maybe he'll do some team stuff on Wednesday, but they could be down him. That would not be ideal in terms of pass rush. You know?
Dreaded bad back.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's gonna be a problem all year.
Yeah,
it's gonna be something they just gotta deal with.
What's the famous line? No one has ever had a bad back.
That is it. It never gets better.
It's true. Well, maybe Preston Smith actually does, you know, round back into form as he believes he will.
Yeah, so. He's always
maybe Preston Smith will actually rush the freaking quarterback.
That would be good. Maybe maybe he and Joe Barry will actually get along and. No, this is not good.
The Joe Barry defense actually letting Preston Smith rush the quarterback.
Remember, this time apparently we're getting Joe Barry pretending to be Chuck Pagano.
Yeah,
right? No, who's he pretending to be?
Forget. I don't.
Because I'm pretty sure this year it's Joe Barry pretends to be Chuck Pagano, and back when he was the DC in Washington, he was Joe Barry. Joe Barry pretends to be Vic Fangio?
I thought he was doing Vic Fangio this year. Is it?
Maybe I got it backwards.
So yeah, aren't we all supposed to be impersonating one of the Shanahans? What's going on here?
Matt LaFleur is impersonating right. Shanahan.
Yeah.
Okay. Got it.
Good. That's what we always
want to know. I just want to know who the impersonating is. You know, what's going on?
Yep. I do want to mention, we'll get to this a little bit more when we get to questions. I do think people are sleeping on Lazard a little bit this year. I know MVS has had a good camp. Everybody says so. But Lazard was tearing it up before he got hurt last year, and he has basically always been good when he's on the field, if he's healthy at all. He was not that far off of MVS yardage-wise on the season last year, and I think there's a good chance. They play different positions. I don't think he's going to like steal MVS time that much, but if he ends up being the second best receiver by yards, touchdowns, whatever, I wouldn't be that surprised. I think... he's also kind of a sneaky fantasy play also, because he is more of the, you know, he'll get a lot of targets. And I think he is definitely a bigger threat around the end zone than MVS is, who's just not that. He's good far away. The closer you get, the less good he gets.
He's nice from afar, but far from nice.
Indeed. That is correct.
Well, he dominated the Saints last time, so they'll be ready for him this time.
On the subject of everyone's pretending to be everyone, I just read The Blind Side for the first time in my life because I was turned off by the Sandra Bullock movie. Like, I thought that I thought the book was just going to be like the movie. Turns out that book is like 60%. Oh my God, Bill Walsh.
Yeah, it is. That's about right. And I also think that I'm surprised at the movie. I know that authors don't get to control movies. However, I think it's very unstated but clear in The Blind Side that it's weird and possibly corrupt, what's going on with Michael Orr. Whereas in the movie, it's like a feel-good story. And those are tonally very different things. So if you've never read The Blind Side, it's good. I highly recommend it. Michael Lewis is always also, good.
Like, but... And even the Michael Orr story is better in the book than it is in the movie.
Yep.
Except for the end where he accidentally assaults a three-year-old and sends him to the hospital. Mm. That happened. People forget. It's not in the Sandra Bullock movie.
Yeah, that would be a real downer.
So apparently every single person is attempting to be Bill Walsh, according to The Blind Side. Every offense is Bill Walsh.
Well, The Blind Side's like 20 years old now, so that was kind of more or less true.
When did it come out? Like 2010? Something like that? It's a decade old at this point. Holy crap. 2010 was over 10 years ago.
It was.
Was it 2010? Was it that far back? I guess it probably... Yeah,
Blind Side's
sure
old. Let's see. Also, Michael...
But it talks about the come up of Bill Walsh and using the passing game instead of a run game when you don't have a very good... It's
getting
it's
the ball
really
out
good.
Before the pass rush gets there. That's what you do.
Yes.
I love Sandra Bullock, by the way, but that... She should not have won an Academy Award for that movie. That's upsetting. I don't think... I mean, unless you give another one to Meryl Streep, I don't think there's obvious clear cut. They should have given it...
2006. So that book is 15 years old at this point.
Oh, my God.
The movie's only 2010, though.
Yeah,
the
that's true. And Michael Lewis, still the only author to have three of his books turned into Academy-nominated movies.
Yes. Big Short. Wow.
Yep.
Big Short, in addition to Moneyball. Two of them, of course, sports movies. Moneyball, Blindside. I like it.
I mean...
very good, very good books. I love Michael Lewis.
Investing is a sport.
Okay. So all three are sports movies. And I'm trying to think, did Christian Bale win for that one? Brad Pitt should have won for Moneyball. Moneyball should have been Best Picture. That movie was insane. Loved it.
It's very good.
Big Short, I don't remember if it got any biggies. It may not have.
I don't think it did. But I think that might be my favorite one. I love Big Short. It's really good.
Big Short was a great movie once. I could never watch it again.
Well, it's depressing, so I get that.
Yes.
But it's entertaining, depressing.
So anyway, football.
Football.
It did win for adapted screenplay, by the way. Adam McKay, Charles Randolph did win for adapted
screenplay. Good for them.
Yes.
All right.
Football, I guess.
We could. It's probably about time to question. But before I do that, the other teams in the North, the Vikings start out with the Bengals. The 49ers play at Detroit, and the Bears get to start off with the Rams and Matthew Stafford. So that's fun. I think that the Vikings probably win because I think the Bengals kind of suck, and the other two get stomped. And I think that's kind of maybe how the year goes for those teams. But
The Bengals just signed a Vikings quarterback to their practice squad.
Oh, well, that now they'll it's all over for the Vikings now.
It's all over for the Vikings.
Their secrets are all revealed. It's
my favorite quote about it was, the only thing this guy was good at was knowing the Vikings offense.
That's awesome. We should remember too, and this is something that I was reminded of today because I wrote at jsonline.com looking at the ESPN. They do sort of an annual simulation of the season, which is very fun. Last time I wrote about it was 2019 when they had the Packers getting the number one seed in the NL. Geez, I'm watching baseball in the NFC and then losing in the first round of the Rams. So this year they have the Packers going to the Super Bowl as the three seed, upsetting the Buccaneers in the NFC championship game. But then losing in the Super Bowl to Buffalo. But I'm reminded of the expanded playoffs, you know, like a team like the Bears, they could go 8-9. They probably will go 8-9 or below. They could make the playoffs. It could be that seventh seed. Remember, seven teams per conference now are getting into the playoffs, so one of these teams is going to be mediocre at best.
It's a good point.
So a team like Chicago, like that's what they're going to be gunning for, you know. I mean, Justin Fields will be quarterback by week 4, week 5, whatever it is.
Yeah,
and they actually, you can't count them out. Actually, it's kind of wild.
Yeah, and garbage always got into the playoffs even with six teams, so that's a good point. Like, we're going to see some real trash get into the playoffs with that extra team. And the Bears do have, I think, some extra leeway to actually do things right. And I think once they get Fields in there, they'll be okay. Their schedule is brutal. If I urge everybody to go take a look at the Bears' schedule. It is very, very difficult. I know it's hard to tell before the season starts. Sometimes you get fooled on those things when certain teams underperform. But it looks like a really tough schedule. But That is true. They might. I don't think they're terrible. Their defense is still good. They still have good skill position players at a couple places. Like Allen Robinson's still good. If Fields is okay, he's got weapons, and I think he is okay. So they might be okay.
Have I put my Fields prediction on wax yet?
I don't think so.
Okay, so we are going to get 3 weeks, exactly 3 weeks of Andy Dalton. Because
is that
Andy Dalton
quality of defense is faced? Get Andy killed?
Andy Dalton is going to get murdered against the Rams.
Yeah, yeah, he is.
And then week two, revenge game against the Bengals.
Okay.
So Andy Dalton's going to tear it up against the Bengals. Week three, they play against a very good Browns team, get destroyed. He gets benched, bring in Fields, who then in week four, his first start ever, is going to play against the Lions. So Fields is going to look like a phenom in week four, and then he's the starter for the rest of the season.
That's a good confidence builder. It's not a bad way to go. I like your theory. It does require that Andy Dalton survive the first week, which
survives week one or week three.
Yeah.
Like more than 10 minutes of week three.
Could be tricky.
So also before we get too far away from baseball, I know this is the first time I've ever said that.
Yeah.
I just learned about Brewers great Zach Greinke. Yes.
Oh, you just learned about Zach Greinke?
I just learned about Zach Greinke. What an interesting character that
guy is. What did you just learn about him?
His general disposition.
That is the best thing to know about Zach Greinke.
It is. It is absolutely the best thing to know about Zach Greinke.
As someone who is very loud about the culture behind masculinity and how men should seek help for their mental issues, I'm a big fan of Zach Greinke immediately.
I think when he was in Milwaukee, everybody pretty much loved Zach Greinke and really did embrace his quirkiness and liked him for it for the most part. That has not been true everywhere that he's gone. But Zach's stories are always the best. There's some good ones about him just talking smack to Ryan Braun about hitting practice. he always has a contest with himself to throw the slowest curveball possible and makes bets with
54.
It gets slower every time he does it. So makes bets with people. He's great. I like Zach Greinke a lot. Cool guy. Well, cool is not the right word, but interesting character.
My favorite thing I learned about Zach Greinke was when he was coming up in 2009, something like that.
Seems longer ago than that with the Royals, but I could be wrong.
Or no, it was 2004. 2004.
Yeah.
He came up and he was supposed to be like the hottest pitching prospect ever. He requested to go back to single A so he could come up as a shortstop.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Is Zach.
So, yeah, just for all the listeners out there, I don't completely hate baseball because I do like an interesting story.
Yeah, that's a good
He's 100% an interesting story. Probably should have won a second Cy Young in 2015. I was looking back at some of this stuff. Jake Arrieta won it. I think Greinke maybe was the better candidate.
He absolutely was the better candidate and definitely should have won the Cy Young that year.
Split some votes with his guy, Clayton Kershaw.
Yeah,
he was the ERA leader in 2015.
And the WHIP leader and the ERA plus leader if you want to adjust for things. Absolutely. Should we do questions?
Yeah, let's do questions.
Let's do questions.
Let's figure out what we're doing here.
Next week, there's going to be a question. Why the hell was Mattel talking about baseball?
Yeah, that's weird.
It's true. I'm going to talk about Madden.
Totally thrown for a loop. Quick reminder, we are part of the MKA Tailgate Network Patreon. If you go and donate the minimum, you get question priority on both podcasts, including this one. So Patreon questions always go first. And we don't have Jay this week, which is sad because we're all set to anoint him as the number one question every week, but oh well.
Speaking of patrons, how come your brother, Danny Noonan, who is a patron, did not ask a question this week?
I don't know. I'm not really sure. He must have had too much going on. He did ask me if Brandon Woodruff has gotten worse since MLB cracked down on funny stuff on the baseball. And yes, he has. He's lost about a point of ERA from the crackdown time till now. That could just be random, but it is worth noting. He also did lose about 200 RPMs off of his spin rate. So, yeah. Anyway, that's enough speculation there.
I watched a video where a D2 pitcher put 700 RPM on his spin rate using SpiderTac.
I mean, it's pretty well established what goes on there with SpiderTac and what comes off. And Brandon did not actually lose as much as you would expect. So it's also possible just a mechanical change or something like that. But he has been also... Pitchers are often just worse from half to half or better from half to half.
Sure. So. And look, I mean, this is a career high in innings for him. So it could very easily be regular workload. I mean, Corbin Burns lost a lot of spin too, and the guy's been still pretty untouchable. Yep. So
Guys compare this to a bunch of players suddenly being bad and hurt all the time when the NFL started testing for HGH?
No, not really. It's a weird thing because everybody uses something. This is its own story. This is for the baseball podcast. This will take too long to do. However, here's the important thing you have to know. Baseballs are too smooth, and so everybody uses something on them to get extra grip. They go through a process of mudding before the game where members of the coaching staff rub them in dirt to get a little bit of friction on them. And so things like spider tack and grippy stuff just grew out of the fact that the baseball as it's constructed is defective for pitching. It is not as good as it should be for grip. So there's a lot to fix there. And I still think it's debatable whether you could call it cheating at all. It's not expressly, it is now expressly banned because baseball decided to expressly ban it. But everybody used something on baseballs to get a better grip so that they wouldn't murder the batters. So there you go.
Should they also be allowed to deflate footballs?
Mm-hmm. I am currently reading a book about Deflategate. It's called Big Game, and it's written by a Pats fan, and even he hates the Pats. It's amazing.
Great. All right, starting with our Patreon questions, PJ Wessels asks, Vessels. Which divisions might be close this year? Which divisions shouldn't be close? Well, the NFC North shouldn't be close.
No, it should not. I think, again, kind of status quo on this a little bit with the AFC East probably not close. I know people... I don't like Miami as much as a lot of people, and maybe New England's good with Mac Jones, but I think Buffalo destroys everybody in that. No, okay. You know what? I kind of take that back. There's a lot of uncertainty there that doesn't exist normally because Zach Wilson looks
Zach Wilson
okay
might
too.
Be good.
Yeah.
Yeah, Zach Wilson might actually be
good. Yeah, you're right. That actually might be closer than I think.
What if Mac Jones is good?
He might be. Okay. It's possible that is a close division. I take that back. Changing the guard.
When was the last time the Bills had the AFC East on lock?
Jim Kelly?
91, yeah.
Something like that. The North, I don't think will be the NFC North, not close. The NFC East is weird. I think Washington's way better than everybody else's in that division, but I've seen people like loving the Giants defense today and I don't get it. And then Dallas,
but they have Danny Dimes,
right? Philadelphia is obviously terrible. And Dallas is, I don't trust Mike. They have a lot of talent, but yeah. So not close.
On the subject of Philadelphia, Paul, I think the best thing for you just happened in Philadelphia.
What's that?
I think Philadelphia just got a different starting quarterback.
What,
so
Gardner?
Your favorite? Yep, I think Gardner Minshew might. I think Gardner Minshew might end up starting, and your favorite, Mr. Hurts, might end up going by the wayside. And in the future, where Jordan Love is starting and bad, and Hurts ends up a free agent.
I do like Jalen Hurts. I think he's okay. He's not great.
He's okay.
He's not. His stats were good in college, but he's got some mechanical problems.
Long-time listeners of the pod will remember you gushing over him pre-draft.
Well, then I looked at his tape. You know, there's a reason I still liked Tyler Huntley and I wasn't like raving about Jalen Hurts is because I could see how you could win with Jalen Hurts if you have a smart offense that uses mobility. You can do something with him, but he's not the same. He's okay, but not great.
It's Felipe Franks season up in here now. We're
he made the team. I'm like he had a bad preseason, but he made the team. So he's still alive. He can still improve. So Tampa's going to destroy the South. That is a bad division this year. That's not going to go well for anybody outside of them. I don't know about the West. I think that'll be close. Kansas City. Chargers might be okay, but I can't count on the Chargers ever being okay.
No, I think Herbert actually is going to have a real shot at MVP this year.
Really?
Yep. Huh. I think he's that good.
Okay, cool.
And I think as long as Keenan Allen stays healthy, which that's a big, big if, yep. But I do think that the Chargers have a phenomenal offense and a good enough defense.
I do like the bones of that defense. I think they could be really good. And I like Justin Herbert. I'm not sure MVP in year two is where I'd go, but
especially because all the Bills have to do is do what you'd expect, and Josh Allen is going to be way, way up there.
Yeah, and if Mahomes has another giant season, that's also quite possible. So yeah, I that kind of covers it. I think the South with Tennessee, they're going to. That might be the most blowout division in football, the AFC South. Tennessee's way better than all those other teams. They're not even that good. Like for a good team, Tennessee's fine, but like Indy is going to be real bad. Houston's going to be Houston and Jacksonville are
bottom of the barrel.
Two of the worst franchises in sports, and you got them in the same division. So that's going to be not great.
Jason Dondlinger asks, am I wrong to have a lot of excitement for what I think Josiah DeGuara might do in this offense? LaFleur loves him. You should see a lot of snaps at both fullback and tight end spots. Do any of you share this thought, or should I curb my enthusiasm? I don't know what that is.
I have no idea what that was.
My attempt at the curb your enthusiasm.
Okay, fine. Yeah. I think it's good to be excited about DeGuara. I think what they want out of him is a use check type player, and I think if he stays healthy and understands the offense, they'll get something like it, and that's a good thing to have. So it's another efficiency bump. It's another part of the playbook they can use that they couldn't use last year because they didn't have a guy to run those routes. They tried. Like that's how Daphne ended up catching a touchdown, is they had him do one of those and it actually worked. And with a guy who's practiced all year and knows how to run deep routes as a fullback, it'll work even better. So it's a good thing.
I think it's 70% what you're saying, yep. And then 30% we are still trying to cope with spending a top 100 pick on a fullback.
Yeah.
But it's possible in this offense he just takes off. He's like the guy who pops this year that no one saw coming.
Yep, I think that is possible. And that is a useful position in the Shanahan offense. I think they overspent for him. I think they could have gotten him two rounds later, but it's not like they don't use that guy. And they've been looking for somebody to play that position since they drafted him and he got hurt. And now they got him back. So I think being excited about him is fine.
Also, he was pancaking dudes before he got hurt.
He was. He looked good. It's not like Sternberger never looked good and then got hurt and then didn't look good and got hurt and didn't look good and did drugs and didn't get hurt and or didn't play well. He was always bad.
He didn't do drugs. He got drunk.
He got drunk. Sorry. Alcohol is a drug. But
thanks, Dare.
But DeGuara did look promising before he got hurt. So I think that he will be an asset to the offense.
Alex Lamers asks, I know the Packers have done a good job finding offensive linemen in recent years, but any concerns about the level of performance and consistency early this season with Bakhtiari on the pup list? I mean, yeah,
I think they're starting Lucas Patrick, and I'm not happy about it.
Agreed. I'm with you on that. He was number one on the depth chart, which was a surprise. And yeah, but yes, aside from the talent drop off, like I think we all kind of think Elgton Jenkins will be fine over there at replacing just Bakhtiari. But the knock-on effects from that are significant and not great, which is, an offensive line is five people deep. And when you lose the top guy and you slide people up, you add a guy who's six spots worse than him in some capacity to the line. And that's what you get. That's how you get Lucas Patrick on the line. The other thing we know from lots of statistical work on offensive lines is one of the best predictors of their effectiveness is continuity from year to year. Lines that stay together tend to work a lot better than lines that replace people and plug people in and out all the time. And the Packers have a lot of rookies, a lot of new people, the lack of continuity and decline in talent, I think, may hit them early. And you may see more blown blocks and a less dominating performance than we're used to until they start to at least gel and replace Lucas Patrick. I think being worried is legit, especially when they run up against a good defense here and there. And the Saints actually have a pretty good one, so they may be tested early too.
Let me ask a rudimentary football question. It's always difficult for me to assess line play anyway, but even during the game, because it's not as simple as saying, oh, so-and-so missed a block and a guy got a free rush, you know, like that happens too, but it's, you know, different schemes, you'll have different results, guys trying to compensate, bringing guys into chip because you can't trust the tackles, or like when guards aren't playing well, when you're not getting the production of the guards, what does that look like? What is with this blocking?
Okay. So a quarterback needs to be able to climb the pocket So it'll take a like a 5-7 step drop, something like that. And then the edge rushers will come around and the tackles will lead them to the outside, and the quarterback should be able to climb the pocket, move forward within the pocket. If your guards are playing poorly, they're just going to climb into a defensive tackle who's in their lap. My all-time favorite example of this to show to people is the Carolina-Denver Super Bowl. Cam Newton, the reason he got murdered by Von Miller was because of Derek Wolfe. Derek Wolfe is the unsung hero of that Super Bowl. And if you want to see what happens when guards don't play well, go watch that and watch Derek Wolfe.
All right. So it does show up more in passing than, you know, stereotypically you think, well, they can't rush the ball up the middle because the guards are letting D tackles through, but it's not as simple as that.
How good are the Packers ever at rushing the ball up the middle?
That's a good point. Like, that's not like
Elton Jenkins is the best left guard in football, and the Packers still don't run behind him.
No, that's a good point.
Yeah,
All right.
Very true.
All right, let's move to Twitter questions. Neil Olson asks, what, if any, new wrinkles will be part of Matt LaFleur's offense in year three? And here we go back to Josiah DeGuara.
I think...
I'm sorry. I love it. Paul just has a giant list of Kyle Juszczyk touchdowns.
Here is your answer. It says in the rundown, and it's Kyle Juszczyk touchdown.
Kyle Juszczyk plays at 15 yards or more from the last time he had a full season, which was substantial. I think there's another big thing to look forward to that's going to be vastly different this year as well, with Randall Cobb and Amari Rodgers joining the team. LaFleur tends to run sort of any old person from the slot. MVS actually played in the slot a ton last year. Lazard plays primarily from the slot when they go three wide. They don't have a normal, you know, small, shifty and small space slot receiver, and haven't for quite some time since Randall Cobb was here the first time. And they will probably have some wrinkles that involve those guys on the field that we haven't really seen before. Usually slot in the Packer offense ends up going deep more often than not. It's a matchup play to get taller guys on shorter people or linebackers or people who don't want to run fast vertically down the field. And they will probably have at least some incorporation of horizontal concepts that they haven't had in the past with those guys. So I look forward to seeing what they do with them. It's novel for the offense. And I also do kind of wonder if it has any knock-on impact with especially MVS getting deep. He had a great DVOA when working out of the slot last year because he could abuse guys when he did get open on a nine route. And if he's not able to run those routes out of the slot as much because they have a traditional slot receiver, it could actually have a negative impact on their vertical game. But I think they'll work around that, and LaFleur is smart enough to get the most out of everybody.
Yeah, but I mean, you'll still see things like MVS in the slot with the quote unquote slot guy, like to the right of him in a trip set, something like that, and you'll see stuff like dagger.
Yeah,
like the slot guy will be running an out versus MVS running a nine.
Basically a mesh, a clever outside mesh of some kind.
Run mesh until you can't,
that's
baby.
That's right.
Jonathan Deal asks a question that is, I think, kind of a companion to the offensive line conversation. Should have read this sooner, but with news that Jenkins is going to start at left tackle, is it more valuable to have a player like Bakhtiari, who is the best or second best at a premier position, or a player like Jenkins who can play versatile positions at an all-pro level? It's tough to answer, right? Because like the problem isn't Jenkins moving, it's what's left in his stead.
Yeah.
So like what do you have behind him? That's kind of what matters there.
That is.
Yeah, but I think he means like if you could choose one for your line.
Yeah, I get it.
Like if you had four average guys, well, that's not true though, because Jenkins is a different animal there. I mean, that's, I don't know. Matt, what were you going to say? I got to think about it.
I would take the number one left tackle in football. You either get the number one left tackle in football or the number one left guard in football who can be top 10 anywhere else. And I think I take the best left tackle in football.
I think that's a good point. Also, do you have to ask yourself, can you live with average guard, center, right tackle? And I think the answer is yes.
Yeah.
Like you can live, like your offensive line doesn't have to be dominant if your left tackle is a stud.
Yeah.
I mean, John Runyon played right tackle last year.
Yep. I think you're right. The answer is Bakhtiari, because it is like where you get them. If you only have one of them, you get the most out of Jenkins by playing him a left tackle. And, you know, you wouldn't use him in that scenario to replace other people on the line, because you need him to play left tackle. In the scenario where you can use his versatility, you have a left tackle that's at least as good as him, and that's the only scenario where that makes any sense. And so that's not what we're talking about here. So yeah, I agree. It's Bakhtiari.
Also, since Jonathan Deal was brought up, he told me he would Venmo me $2 if I mentioned this.
Okay. All right.
Bob McGinn is no longer with the Athletic. He is with Ty Dunn's Go Long.
That is correct.
Bob McGinn is the reason that I was boycotting the Athletic, because Bob McGinn once wrote an article that said Mike McCarthy was a bad coach because he's fat.
He did do that. That is true. That did happen.
So now that Bob McGinn is no longer with the Athletic, someone please send me an affiliate link so they can get the credit for me re-signing up with the Athletic.
Okay. There you
go. At me on Twitter with your affiliate link.
$2 for Matt.
Yeah.
Quentin Witzel says, who will have the second most receiving yards on the season?
This is
Alan Lazard.
I love this question. I'm tempted to go Alan Lazard, but I'm really not sure.
Paul, 45 minutes ago, you said it was going to be Alan Lazard.
But there's so many things working against and for everybody. That's the thing. So it was MVS over Tanyan by 100 yards last year. And if you think MVS is going to improve on last season, it'll be him. Like, if you think he can, cut the drops a little bit, get the catch percentage up to, like, 60, he'll probably add 100, 150 yards to his total, and he'll do it. But Lazard missed 6 games last year and was only a couple hundred yards under him. So if he plays the whole time and at least gets a couple targets a game, he'll be right there with him. But Tanyan also, like, only got 50-something targets last year. If they work him in more to the offense this year, it's not impossible to see him going up by a couple hundred yards. And then you have Cobb stealing targets from various people across the way too. And you probably have Kylan Hill stealing targets from people as well. So it's going to be really, really close, I think. I probably go Lazard too, just because 6 games is a lot, and I do think he's underrated. But I think it's really an open question as to who gets it.
It's going to be Davante Adams.
Well, as second best?
So who's getting first?
Oh, I don't know.
Is he getting hurt in like week 5 or?
Well, so let me galaxy brain this, because I 100% do not believe this, not even for a split millisecond. But like, one of the disadvantages to having Davante Adams not under contract beyond this year is you can't fault him if he gets a little nicked up, if he doesn't, you know, hurry back. I mean, they kind of, you know, he missed 3 weeks last year. He'll probably miss a week or two just because it's the NFL and it's a 17-game season. It's not really to his advantage to, like, hustle back if he doesn't think he's going to be with the Packers next year. I'm not saying he'd be lazy about it. I'm just saying he's got to be smart. So, I don't know. Maybe he misses some time. Like, I don't even think that's actually true.
He would have to
just throwing it out there.
So, Devontae did lead the team in receiving by about 700 yards last year,
and he missed 3 games.
And
that's incredible.
He missed 2 games, I think. But
is it only 2? Okay.
So counterpoint to Devontae not being under contract: if this truly is the last dance, if this is the last year of Aaron Rodgers, Devontae's not going to re-sign with the Packers. So what if they DeMarco Murray him? Just force feed him 300 touches. And run the goddamn
Devontae Adams
off.
Also, like, yes, he is regarded as one of the best receivers in football at the moment. That has not been the case for that long. And if he has a down season, people may start to see last year as a blip. So he does have some contract year pressure too. That's not totally absent.
Yeah, just DeMarco Murray. Give him 300 targets and.
It'll be a good battle, though. I'll take Lazard, and I'm picking Lazard in all of my fantasy leagues because I do think that there's a good chance he's better than people think.
Is that reference too old at this point for people to get?
I have forgotten about DeMarco Murray getting crushed into the ground.
So 2014, DeMarco Murray had something like 450 touches in the last year of his contract.
Okay.
I mean, we already talked about movies from 2010. We should absolutely be able to talk about NFL football from 2014, right?
Yeah, it's Matt taking over the Devin Aromashadu portion of the podcast.
Another thing about Devin Aromashadu.
The Packers receiving core is interesting to me because they are, you know, they're good, but I don't know if we can expect anybody to really just like rise above their station at all. We know what Devontae is capable of, and how much more can he really give you? You know, like, he's already at a superstar level. Where are you going to go there? We know MVS's limits. He's going to have great games. He's going to have drops. He's not going to, you know, we haven't seen evidence that he's going to become like a number two, like a true blue number two receiver. Alan Lazard is good, but you know, he's what he is, right? Like, I think that's the best version of Alan Lazard already.
I'm not sure about that so much because,
all right,
let me give you the case for Alan Lazard, which I'm trying to do right now, but Football Outsiders is being a bitch. He was like third in the league in terms of separation per target, which if I get this quickly enough, I'll actually tell you what he is for sure. Look at Bob Tonyan was very good last year too. Lazard averaged 3.7 yards of separation per target last year. That was good for 1, 2, 3, like 7th or 8th in the league. So he gets a ton of separation, and he always has a great DVOA. He would have ranked 4th in the league in DVOA had he had enough targets to qualify last year. And he's almost always a top 10 player. And all that measures is you're either being explosive or you're always generating first downs. So he's always finding the sticks, and always doing that. He is younger than Marquez Valdes-Scantling by a year. So if you want to project growth in MVS, you can also project it in Alan Lazard, who is actually still his junior. And, you know, he's always either missed time or had something go wrong. If he actually plays a full season and can keep volume decent, I think there's a good chance he's a really good receiver. So,
okay.
I like guys who are efficient in small sample sizes. I like seeing what they can do with bigger sample sizes, and he'll be really good if he actually gets them.
Well, you know, Paul, there are two types of people. Those that can extrapolate based on past data.
Yes.
Very good. It's a great joke. I love it.
This is it. This is our last question.
Yep.
From Bill Pakoda. If you had to choose only one rock as a color guy, which would you pick? Who's better? Nice piece of hitting rock, or groans of ecstasy on every completed deep ball rock? This is rock as in Bill Schroeder, right?
Versus rock as in Larry McCarron, yes.
Yes. Yeah. So do you prefer... Oh, okay, so he's just asking about Larry McCarron, probably.
Well, he wants to know, do you prefer Bill Schroeder or Larry McCarron?
Oh, okay.
That's
but I
question.
Feel like Bill Schroeder and Larry McCarron are almost identical.
Oh, I heartily disagree with this.
I just mean in terms of, like, they both lose it, and they both will interrupt the great play-by-play call to, like, fan out for a second. Like, how many – I mean, it happens all the time with, like, both those guys.
The answer has got to be Larry, because he's going to say Brandon Cobb.
He will do that.
But that was Joe Buck who said Brandon Cobb.
No, that was Larry McCarron. Larry and his messed up pinky.
He's got
Brandon Cobb. Huh. Wasn't that Larry McCarron?
I don't think it was. I think it was one of the old guy announcers at CBS, and I don't think it was Buck either. Shoot.
Oh, it has to be. Buck is on that call.
Well,
Buck said he's got Cobb, so maybe he didn't say that. So, but
I
but
swear
right,
to God,
someone
Brandon
said Brandon Cobb.
Guys, Brandon Cobb is Larry McCarron.
Your homework is to at Matub with who said Brandon Cobb. All right, I know it was somebody. If you've listened,
I know the answer.
Okay.
I know the answer.
What is it?
Tell me.
It was Larry McCarron.
It was. Oh, okay.
Wayne and Larry were on the call of the fourth down.
Yeah.
And Larry McCarron said, he's got Brandon Cobb.
I mean, the Larry McCarron's the yes. Yes. Wow. In the middle of a huge play. I love that. That's cool. That's absolutely.
the downside of Larry McCarron is if I never see his mangled finger ever again.
He's on the radio. You don't have to see it. You don't have to see it. He's on the radio. No,
but then they'll show him on the sideline holding a microphone and interviewing someone, and his mangled ass pinky is sticking out. He's like, hey, let me talk to you about this.
But Bill Schroeder is different. Bill Schroeder is a different person. Bill Schroeder is very different. He has a lot of quiet disdain and a lot more shtick than Larry does. Larry's just there yelling enthusiastically, which is totally good. I'm on board with that for football. And Bill's like often will be like, don't agree with that. That's a terrible call right there. And talking about his no hitter and all that jazz. So I like him. He's grown on me a lot over time. So I might go with baseball rock over football rock. But they're both good for their sports. They capture the temperament of what they call very well.
I think Bill Schroeder's challenge and all color commentators for baseball is that there is such a high volume of games. You just can't give that much analysis.
Yeah.
Like at some point you just surrender to the cliche because you just said this the night before, or, you know, like there's just not enough pieces of human interest or like technical merit to talk about it. So at some point you just surrender to who you, to like geeking out a little bit. And I think a lot about broadcasting a lot and how it's sort of been, I don't know if anesthetized is the word I'm looking for, but there aren't a lot of characters in broadcasting anymore. Then the younger generation, my generation, our generation of broadcasters are very by the book, down the middle, a lot of voices that sound similar. And it's very professional and it's very good. It's quality. They're giving you a clear cut visual play by play. And that's great. But you don't have the Ron Santos of the world anymore, or the Hawk Harrelsons of the world. I mean, those guys, beloved, Bob Uecker, Hawk Harrelson, Ron Santo, legendary voices who are beloved by their fan bases. And obviously football is a different animal because all the TV broadcasts are national. So you don't have that TV voice like you do in baseball, but you do have that still on the radio. And I don't think there are going to be a lot of Larry McCarrans. Like there aren't a lot of color commentators coming up through the ranks who are just like, you know, yelling, screaming yes in the middle of the game-winning touchdown.
There was one that they made his ass a head coach.
Exactly. So the lack of character is the wrong word. Like the announcers have great character. It's just they're not characters. Well, and you know, so it's easier to cling to the guys who are still kind of
college. Like, college had a really good pairing in Rex Ryan and Beth. Is it Mullins?
Beth Mullins. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought that was a good like Laurel and Hardy person who's screams versus straight man.
Yeah, I just though for national broadcast, you're not getting that partisan thing, which we all say we don't want. Like fans constantly emphasize in their minds only the negative stuff said about their team. True. Every game blog I work, it's like, oh, the announcers sure are loving on name the opponent. It's like it's even. I promise you, you just only hear the stuff that annoys you. You don't hear the stuff that excites you because you're too busy being excited with them.
I will agree with that to a point. I do think that Troy Aikman purposely hates on the Cowboys.
Oh, the Cowboys.
Interesting.
Really?
That's a twist.
I didn't know where that was going.
I know, right? I think Troy Aikman overtly hates on the Cowboys so he doesn't seem like a homer.
Interesting. Sure. Okay.
Coach who coaches his kid is harder on his kid.
Yes, exactly. I think that he's overtly mean to the Cowboys.
Huh. I honestly would not have known that. That's interesting.
No. Okay. Good observation.
Yeah,
that's all.
Hit you with the twist.
I think that is all we had. So before we get out of here, any plugs at the JS?
Not really today. I did do the live game blog for the Badgers this past week. It did not go well.
No.
For the Badgers, for the commenters on the blog, it was pretty much a cesspool. But we'll be doing that again. I think we'll be doing that again for the Notre Dame game in a couple weeks. But
I'm sure that won't be a cesspool at all. There probably will be no mentions of Jack Cohn.
It could be a nuclear meltdown. We have to see. But obviously at jsonline.com, we have a ton of coverage coming up for this game. Tom Silverstein, Ryan Wood, Pete Daugherty. We've got just a lot of Packers stuff coming up this week, and everybody should check that out. Packersnews.com if you prefer, but it's in the JS Online sort of network of stuff. You know, Badgers are still going, Brewers are still going. So it's a great time of year for Wisconsin sports. The Badgers loss certainly put a little bit of a damper on it, but everybody's pretty fired up about what's to come here. So just check that out, jsonline.com.
Nice. Matt, yourself?
I will be competing in powerlifting this weekend.
Good luck.
At Gorilla Warfare, Gorilla like the animal. It will be live streamed. I'll be posting it on my Twitter if anyone wants to watch.
Sweet.
It's Sunday, 2 p.m. Mountain Time, best time, so 3 p.m. Lambo time.
I just don't know, but as much as I love you and want to support you, I don't know if people who listen to this podcast will be focused on that at 3 o'clock on Sunday.
Yes, so if you guys
I have
if
a
you
feeling guys could, they'll be doing other things,
turn off the Packer game to watch me lift weights.
That's a pitch. That is
but the vibe
that's like me saying Devonta Adams is going to have the second highest receiving yard.
You have just screamed into the void, and
yes. So yeah, that's the running joke. I think that's it. All I got to plug. Pumpkin Spice Coffee is available on appletoncoffee.com. Use REE at checkout to save 10%.
That is correct. It is delicious. There I had go. It this morning. I have a season preview up at the Shepherd Express in. At least it should be by the time you hear this, and I'll have a couple pieces up on APC this week. on the receiving crew and where regression to the mean may hit people. In particular, I've already done one on Bob Tonyan and his insane catch percentage. But MVS also led the league in yards per reception by a country mile, and Alan Lazard has a couple of quirky advanced statistics about him that may either help him become great or crush him down, and we'll never see him again. So we'll see where that goes. But check those out over at APC. Again, if you're hearing this on the Epic Packing Company podcast for the first time, you can ask us questions on Twitter at the Twitter account for this feed is as eligible, which is only Bill Pakoda, by the way. Way to get Pakoda Bill on your as your Twitter handle. That's just a good poll there. But yeah, we're as eligible on Twitter. You can ask there. The Milwaukee's Tailgate Patreon, if you want to throw us a couple bucks, you get question priority. And other than that, thank you for listening and enjoy the game.